You're listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skull in a pool of cerebrospinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Five Levels of Commitment, or How to Play Your Opponent Like a Drum. In an earlier episode entitled A More Precise Take on Precision Striking, I discussed the importance of learning the proper depth of penetration into the target to maximize the effectiveness and efficiency of your strike. Today I'm going to discuss manipulating the amount of penetration to achieve more subtle and sophisticated effects. I'm going to use the word commitment to indicate the amount of penetration into the target. The phrase full commitment will refer to the amount of penetration needed to do the most damage. I call it this because to strike for maximum damage requires you to stand a bit closer to the opponent than for lesser levels of commitment, and of equal importance, to stay in striking range longer than you would for lesser levels of commitment. As a result, a fully committed strike can result in a more effective blow to the opponent, but being closer to him for a longer period of time increases the chances of being hit with a counterattack or manipulated with footwork. This also means that I am now assuming that you have already developed a certain level of competence in judging the optimal amount of penetration in your strikes. In the early levels of training the striking martial artist, I have the student concentrate on full commitment with each strike. This is because I want the student to develop confidence that his or her strikes are indeed effective. This also applies to my topic today, because the tactics I'm going to discuss today will only work effectively if your opponent perceives that you are striking with a level of power that he or she respects. Now, for fighting against relatively unsophisticated opponents, as in many self-defense encounters, full commitment strikes work very well. But, as you begin to take on opponents with a deeper and more sophisticated game, you need to grow your own game in response. One way to do this is to learn to vary the level of commitment of your strikes to create different effects. As I said, full commitment takes more time for each strike than do other levels of commitment. The difference between various levels of commitment is easier to see during combinations by observing the elapsed time between each strike. To better understand where I'm going with this, let's think of a typical striking combination. Let's use what I call the boxing four count. From an orthodox stance, this is a left jab, followed by a straight right hand, then a left hook, and finishing with another straight right hand. If you were to throw each punch with full commitment, the timing would sound something like bam, 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 bam. One really effective way to conceptualize this is to compare it to the counting system used in music. That might make our four count sound something like this. 1, 2, 3, 4. That's a very regular cadence. There's a lot of time between the punches. A skilled opponent can easily hear the rhythm and use the rhythm to predict each following punch to more easily defend against it, and even fit counterstrikes into the gaps. So here's where I introduce the concept of partially committed striking. A partially committed strike purposely penetrates into the target less than a fully committed one. Now, in the last episode, I spent a lot of time carefully explaining why it's important to learn the perfect depth of penetration for maximum damage. Why on earth would I now suggest that you should ever do less than that? The first reason is that a partially committed strike takes less time than a fully committed strike. It can thus fit through a smaller window of time. It also can create the illusion in the opponent's mind that your hand speed is faster than he had realized. Striking like this allows you to change up the rhythm in order to confuse the opponent. Let's go back to our combination and experiment with partial commitment. First, let's change all four punches to partial commitment punches. That now makes the rhythm of the combination 1 and 2 and, instead of 1, 2, three, four. Did you hear that? All four punches happened in half the time that it took to throw them fully committed. Under the right circumstances, that can be very useful. The best results often come when you mix levels of commitment within the combination. Let's start by replacing the third punch, the left hook, with a faster, partially committed left hook, but stay with full commitment on the other three punches. The cadence of this combination would now go something like 1, 2, and 3. This makes your final straight right hand land on target one beat earlier than it normally would. We traded some of the power on one of the punches to gain a more deceptive and confusing rhythm for the combination. Unlike a feint or a false attack, a partially committed strike still strikes the opponent, registering on his or her nervous system as a blow. Sometimes it even causes significant damage, even though that's not its primary purpose. At combat speed, these additional lighter blows at odd timings can help to overload the information flow that the opponent is taking in. In the words of the immortal toast proposed at many a military banquet, "Confusion to the enemy." This use of varying levels of commitment in striking is an example of what Bruce Lee called broken rhythm. Experiment with this idea yourself, using any combination. Plug in partial commitment strikes for one or more of the strikes. It works with kicks, knees, elbows, or any other type of striking that can be done in combination. You can use partial commitment on strikes as probing techniques. The fact that you can throw a partially committed strike from slightly farther away than a fully committed strike, and more importantly, spend less time in range, allows you to probe the opponent's defenses and test his reactions with a higher degree of safety. Partially committed strikes also work well as what I call covering fire. Covering fire is striking that is intended to occupy the opponent's attention while you use footwork to relocate. This is a bit like the concept used by performing magicians called misdirection, in which they use subtle movements and eye direction to draw your eyes away from the sleight-of-hand trick they are trying to conceal. With covering fire, you throw your strike or strikes as if to say, "Ooh, look at this scary punch." If things go as you would like, by the time your opponent returns his attention to you, you have retreated to safety, or sidestepped to gain a better angle, or closed to a different range. Now, of course, as I said earlier, these applications will work well only if you have convinced the opponent to respect your power. Once again, that's one of the reasons that I train the beginning martial arts student to first learn to develop full commitment in each strike, until a certain level of competence has been achieved. For those of you who have developed good hand speed, another alternative is zero commitment striking. What distinguishes zero commitment striking from partial commitment? It is that the zero commitment strike only barely touches the opponent. There is no significant transfer of kinetic energy, and thus no significant damage, with the possible exception of contact to the eyeball or groin. What the opponent feels is a sharp flick that registers on his sensory nerves. This is even safer than partial commitment striking, since you are a bit further away yet and spend even less time there. A classic example of zero commitment striking was used brilliantly by Muhammad Ali. He was notorious for the use of a, quote, flicking, unquote, left jab. He was frequently criticized by boxing journalists for using sloppy technique when he did this. These journalists didn't understand the depth of Mr. Ali's game. He actually utilized a number of variations of each traditional boxing punch, including the jab. His flicking jab, far from being sloppy, was a very carefully conceived and executed tool. He was fully capable of throwing the more traditional version of the jab, which was a fully committed version, when he judged it the right tool for the job. He simply did not waste precious time and energy, or take needless chances, throwing power each and every time he punched. Once he had his opponent confused and maybe frightened by his dazzling hand speed, footwork, and surprising power, he knew he could reap great rewards with little risk by employing his flicking left jab. By the way, I think much of the boxing journalism establishment's dislike of Muhammad Ali stemmed not from their dislike of his technique, but from their dislike of a vocal, assertive, self-promoting African-American man in the 1960s in the United States. Moving even further away from the opponent, now we come to the safest two levels of commitment, which together I call negative commitment. In negative commitment, your striking motion makes no contact with the opponent. The first of them is the false attack. The false attack is a different animal than a fake or a feint. I learned this distinction from my time training in Western fencing. If you were to watch a fighter shadowboxing, you would easily be able to tell when he is practicing faking and feinting, and when he is throwing more complete attacks. But without the reference of an opponent near the shadow boxer, you would not be able to distinguish a false attack from one that would have made contact. This is because, unlike a feint, a false attack is delivered with full extension. What makes it false is that you throw it from too far away to contact the opponent. Of course, if you are ridiculously far away from the opponent, he'll see right through your ruse. The trick is to deliver your false attack from a plausible distance that is close enough that to an opponent without an exquisite sense of distance judgment, he's not quite sure whether the attack would hit him or not, and thus frequently a well-executed false attack draws a response from the opponent. The false attack is a fantastic tool for probing your opponent's defenses from a safe distance, confuse the opponent, and draw responses from them that you can use for your counterattacks. In the hands of someone who has developed their sense of distance to a very high level, this can be quite useful, especially when facing opponents whose sense of distance is less well developed. The offensive tactic with the lowest amount of commitment is the fake or the feint. As most of you know, a feint is when you execute only a partially extended attacking motion in the hopes that it will draw a response from the opponent. This takes less time than a false attack and offers less of an extended limb to an opponent who may wish to manipulate it. There you have it. The five levels of commitment in striking are, from longest to shortest range, feints, false attacks, zero commitment attacks, partial commitment attacks, and full commitment attacks. As a thought experiment, think of all the possible opponents against which you could pit your skills standing in a line. At one end of the line are those who are frightened and twitchy, like Barney Fife from the old Andy Griffith show. Very little commitment is needed to elicit a response from such opponents. You can easily feint them into knots. As you move down the line, the opponents grow more calm, requiring you to increase the use of higher levels of commitment to get the results that you want. At the far end of the line are the steely-eyed veterans with great skill at judging distance. With them, you will have fewer tools that work, and it will be necessary to slug it out more. Of course, there are other ways to be deceptive, like the many variations of lateral movement, but I find it valuable to keep this concept of the various levels of commitment in mind during the striking portion of my game. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Martial Brain or the Rising Phoenix Academy at our website, rpmartialarts.com.